Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting in the Duck South Studios on this Friday afternoon. I've got a stranger joining me today. All the way back home. I don't even know where you've been. I know you've been out in Oklahoma some, but Mr. Bradley Ramsey.
It's good to be back, Rocky. I've missed being on here with you. I have been in Oklahoma, but I spent most of the last eternity in West Texas, out in the middle of Odessa, trying to make some money so I can chase ducks.
That is, man, that's a land that time forgot.
Oh, I wish I could forget it. I got no love for West Texas other than the fact that it makes me money.
Hey, and you've been missing some off of the site, too, a little bit. I ain't even seen you hardly posting at all.
Well, you know, honestly, Rocky, I have been absent. And I've come back now, and actually, you know, that's something I want to talk to you about today. It's just, you know, all this blow-up and stuff that's been happening of late, you know, bad seasons are bad seasons, but the demeanor that took over the site for a little while really had me down on social media and Duck South and just, you know, social media and Facebook in general. I just kind of checked out. I just got burned out, man. But I see that, you know, some leaves are turning and it's getting better. And, you know, I had a conversation with some of the other of us older gentlemen, you know, the honor guard, as it were. And they said, you know, sometimes you just got to step back for a minute and, you know, but, you know, the fights and arguments that are worth having, the ones that aren't, just ignore them.
So what you're telling me is you've got the Murtaugh disease. That's what it sounds like.
The disease?
The Murtaugh disease.
You have to explain that one to me.
All right. One of my favorite movies of all time is Lethal Weapon. Now, do you uh-huh. remember the two main characters
oh, yeah.
of Lethal Weapon?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He had Riggs and Murtaugh. Riggs was Mel Gibson, and Murtaugh was Danny Glover. But whenever they would get in a tough spot, you know, because Riggs was always known to throw Murtaugh in a tough spot. He loved to jump into action. What was Murtaugh's number one line all throughout Lethal Weapon?
You're going to have to refresh me on it.
Riggs, I'm too old for this stuff. But never did. but he never did say stuff. I'm too old for this shit.
That is exactly what I have been afflicted with since about the second weekend of the duck season.
Social media is Riggs. And you are Murtaugh.
I am Murtaugh. That's right. That's right. It just, you know, Rocky, it just, to a certain degree, it's disheartening to me to see that, you know, nobody can accept that sometimes we just have tough seasons and they always want to blame somebody else and poor mouth and, you know, fuss and complain and, you know, in having to have the same discussions or arguments or pointing out the same facts to people over and over and over again. You know, I'm a little bit more of a literary person than I'm a movie person, so it's my Don Quixote thing. You know, I get tired of tilting at windmills. But eventually, you just have to strap on your beaten up armor and go back, wade back into the fray. Because what we're fighting for, or what I fight for, I guess I'd say, is and speak up for, is common sense and gentlemanly aspects of waterfowling and respectfulness. And, you know, I try not to get dragged down in the mud. And, you know, after a while, getting dragged into it and getting your name, you know, slandered and beat up on and, you know, being called an idiot and saying, being told you're a liar and you're a stooge or this person or that person. It just feels like it's easier to walk away. But when I think about what is at stake as far as waterfowl and waterfowling and habitat and conservation, it's worth the frustration. It's worth repeating myself for the 100th time. Because it is what I believe in. It's what I know is right. And sometimes you just have to say, okay, well, you know, being right's not always that much fun.
Let's talk about a few things.
All right.
Let's talk about the beginnings of the frustration. Because I know you're probably not going to say the name, but I don't give a crap. FFL. They
yep.
are the origins of a lot of frustration in duck hunting. If people don't see that these people are seeking to divide, and division's never good. Especially a small group as duck hunting is, as far as numbers versus the total population, you know, and then you're trying to divide that small number again.
Yep.
You know, Bill Cooksey said it best. And listen, the thing about it is, I think that some of the things that the FFL do say are spot on. We all are in agreement about as far as concerning duck hunting. But the one flag that they march into battle with every single time, I'm going to get back to what Bill Cooksey said, is this flooded corn debacle.
Right. Right.
Let me say this, and I was telling Patrick this morning. When it comes to number of acres that are flooded for ducks up and down the Mississippi Flyway, it is the pimple. This is Bill Cooksey's quote, and it's a really good one. It's a pimple on a fat ass woman. It is minuscule. You know, because really and truly, and I don't know why, I'm not going to sit here and act like a genius, but ducks really don't start feeding in flooded impoundments, flooded agricultural fields until they get to about Missouri. Most of the time, north
right.
and west of that, they're dry feeding. So blaming a little bit of flooded corn as the problem, that's not the battle you want to fight. That's my disagreement with that whole deal. That's not the battle you want to fight. You really want to fight a battle? Let's start with the ethanol industry, because that's what's caused this immense, huge amount of acreage in corn.
Yeah.
And those ducks are dry feeding in that no-till, non-flooded corn.
And I could even side with them on some changes that need to be made to our sanctuary systems on our refuges. And I get really tired of people saying refuge, 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 when what they actually mean is sanctuary. Because where I'm going to hunt tomorrow is a national wildlife refuge, but it has sanctuary areas on it. I could get behind saying, okay, you know what? Our sanctuaries don't need to have planted crops that are manipulated. And my definition of manipulation does not match the FFL's. Theirs is you put water on it, you've manipulated it. Well, if you make that your definition, you just ruined planting Japanese millet, managing moist soil, all that. I could agree that our sanctuaries on our refuges need to be managed for moist soil in the places where those sanctuaries are not part of an active lease crop agreement for the money to fund the refuge. But when you look at the minuscule numbers of acres, and when people hear, oh, well, there's 10,000 acres or whatever it is that's flooded under private management. That sounds like a big number, but it's really nothing. But you're right. These birds don't really go to water like that until they get below a certain area. And second of all, they don't go to that kind of feed until it's cold enough to need it. There's a scientific reason that they go to it. There's a scientific reason they seek out corn. It is a high carbohydrate food that raises their body temperature. You try to kill ducks in a cornfield when it's 60 degrees outside or 50 degrees outside, you're peeing up a rope. So, I mean, yeah, that battle, I mean, that what scares me the most about what the FFL is trying to do is, and I've said it before and I'll keep saying it and I'm going to keep fighting the good fight, is that they are, what if they were ever successful in what they're attempting to do, it would take away incentive from private landowners to manage wetlands for waterfowl. And something you and I talked about the other day is this entitlement idea. Somehow, guys sitting at one part of the flyway are saying, they're taking my ducks. They're not your ducks. Nobody's entitled to six ducks just because they bought a license. You have an opportunity, but no one guaranteed you six ducks.
I think you're if you track what's happened over the past few years, which I am not advocating, you better start shaking your fist at God, because weather is a major issue in the short term. Look, we have ducks sitting in Canada this time last year. We've got ducks sitting in Canada right now. And the 2 years previous to that were extremely warm, and the ducks never really made it. You know, it's just in talking to Ramsey the other night, recording that podcast, you know, talking to those guys that are sitting in Wyoming, Nebraska, that see the large migration coming out of Alberta. They hadn't seen it. They've seen a short-term, small push of waterfowl, but they hadn't seen the giant Canadas. Look, you were on a hunt with Shelby Anderson the other day. What did Shelby tell you? We hadn't seen them. The small geese aren't here.
We had a great shoot with those guys.
They worked their butt off to find them, though.
They did, and they managed their pressure. But we were the top shoot they'd had of the season, and it was still not what they expect out of a shoot. You know, we have not seen it, and people don't like to talk about, you know. We have to put it in terms of weather, because no one wants to talk about climate, because that's become a political hot potato. But our weather systems are changing. How they are moving across our continent are changing. And it's been going on for a while. And as you and I talked about the other day offline, all we've had is these west to east fronts. We haven't had the deep, plunging, hard Arctic fronts. And you know, the snow cover is almost nowhere. And I know people get tired of hearing that, but it's just fact. If you don't cover up a duck's food, make it where it's energetically inefficient for him to stay there and feed, he's not leaving. There's no reason for him to. I'm here, there's food, there's water, there's cute girls. Why would I go anywhere else? And, you know, the other compounding factor we have down here right now from St. Louis South is there is so much water on the ground. And it's been that way from early in the season. And I drove from here to Bastrop, Louisiana yesterday, believe it or not, just to buy some shotgun shells. But I'll get into that later. And there was not a field that I saw that was not holding sheet water. So if you take the billions of acres, millions maybe, then every duck that comes down this flyway has got his own acre of water right now. Yeah, so even if they were all here, they'd be so scattered. It's a rough season. And you know, Rocky, I hear these people complaining, and somebody made a point the other day that a lot of duck hunters right now have never not known a 60-6 season. And that's true. I got to looking back to some of my dad's old field notes. He kept a journal every single day of hunting season from weather-related stuff that would affect the hunting season. We had bad seasons in the past, we had bad seasons in the 1960s and 70s. It happened. There are years when the migration stalls out, and there weren't, you know, flooded acres up north of us holding all this Tony Vandermore habitat flats, you know, the refuge systems holding all our birds. They didn't come then when the weather was not right. They're not going to come now when the weather's not right. You know, people act like this is the first bad season ever. It's not. It happens. We've gotten spoiled, and that goes back to that entitlement thing that I talked about. It's a sickness in our society, and it's a sickness in our hunting industry. And I think a lot of it has to do with the social media aspect, which we're a part of, and we're trying to make it better. But when you see the pictures of straps and people bragging about they kill them all, killer's going to kill, I kill them all the time, it makes other people feel like, well, what? Why didn't I get my ducks? Well, I'm sorry, brother, but they're not your ducks. They're God's ducks. You're privileged to kill them when you do.
I think a lot of the people that are complaining are not really going after them. They're going and sitting in Pappy's blind that they've had for 75 years.
I think there's some of that. Yeah, for sure. I think there is. And you know, there are places where you should reasonably expect to kill ducks on the average year, but we are not in the average year. And, you know, just in my crew, and we have, you know, my circle of friends, we have some of the most wonderful private land in this region. We've had to adjust our game this year. We've had to change our expectations, change our pressure, change the number of hunters we're taking, just to keep something consistent going. It's a tough season. It just is. I've been through worse ones. This is 38 years for me, and I've got records where my father's camp in one of the most prime places that anyone in the Mississippi Delta would beg to hunt as private land, when his parties didn't break 125 birds for the season. That wasn't that long ago. That's within my hunting lifetime.
I will say this. I don't know if you, yes, you did see the post that, where'd that post come from? We both commented on it.
What was the topic?
He was talking about the corn last night. It was Jeff that made a post. It wasn't originally, he didn't post it in Duck South, he posted it on his own personal page, but Jeff Foles made the post about the ducks going turning nocturnal. I believe that. I really believe that to be true. They the ones that are here have adjusted. But without weather,
you don't get new ones.
Yeah,
and that happens. I mean, that's pressured ducks. That's ducks that have been there, done that, got the T-shirt. They've been shot at. They've seen the blinds. They know where the hunters are. They know that they go to food during the daylight hours. There's a chance they're going to get shot. So why wouldn't they adjust their behavior? And so we can't adjust our behaviors as hunters to hunt at night, but we can adjust our behavior and our expectations to deal with the circumstances we're dealt with on a daily, seasonally, or, you know, annual basis. You know, I'm still not the guy that's going to be saying refuge is bad, refuge is bad. It's just not. You know, there's plenty of people who'll tell you that having sanctuaries near them actually helps their duck hunting.
I think the big thing that people don't understand when it comes to, and I tried to get into this a little bit more, Bill, the other day, is if you go back and look at the number of acres that weren't just specifically managed for waterfowl, but the number of acres that just flooded naturally and pre-roundup days had natural vegetation to feed all the ducks you ever wanted. Yep. You know, pre, say, 1990, you know, the little bit of that we've replaced it with for privately managed habitat doesn't even compare to that.
No, we're still at a huge net loss of habitat.
Huge!
We are still at a huge net loss of habitat. habitat. You know, these programs, CRP, WRP, WHIP, none of them have not scratched the surface of replacing what was lost. And that's what scares me so bad about people wanting to, you know, the FFL and groups like that wanting to, you know, trash the farm bill, and people like Delta who are doing great stuff to put provisions in these bills to help us conserve habitat and to make food available to wintering waterfowl. You know, you don't know what you're trying to destroy. We are not gaining habitat back. We're still in net loss.
I will say this. I think that overall, and I really hadn't delved often to this very deep, something is going on with mallards. You gotta admit that from a historical perspective, the change in the number of mallards that did come down the flyway years ago without weather versus now.
Yeah. Yeah. But I go back to a lot of what Pat talks about, a lot of the studies of, you know, when we lose birds further up the flyway, especially older birds, when we lost some of those super hens, when we started having some bad weather years where we didn't get birds down here, but what did come down got shot. And the broods, you know, don't know to come here. I mean, a duck's not going to just wake up one day and go, you know what, I want to be in Louisiana without having been here and experienced Louisiana. And come down here and said, oh, it's a great place to overwinter. I can eat. I can not get shot. I mean, they've got to go back with this reasonable feeling of safety and cessation, having found what they needed in the habitat for it to be a good place to come back to and bring their children to. I think we lost a lot of that. And you know, people want to think that ducks are always going to do what ducks have always done when the game board they're playing on changes every year. Think about that. We're expecting a bird to a wild creature's knowledge and evolutionary process of survival to stay exactly as it was when it was first created by the hand of God, when we have changed the playing field since we came to this country. We expect ducks to behave the same way they did before Americans got here to today, when everything about that duck's life has changed because of what we have done, from farming to urbanization to channelizing rivers to, you know, cooling plants. They're not reacting to the same environment they did in the 1970s or the 60s or the 50s or even the 90s.
You and I have talked about this one a lot, though, too, is the day that somebody catches a gadwall eating corn, send me a picture, please.
Yeah.
Because, you know, gadwalls are rarely caught feeding on corn. Rarely.
They are that's why they are so rarely banded, because you can't get them to come to a bait pile hardly. I went to Forbes Biological Station, which everybody posts on the site when they do their duck counts in the Missouri and the Illinois River, and talked to those guys personally about that, about how hard it was to capture gadwall in order to band them, because they don't come to bait. They're not a corn feeder. They're much more of a vegetative structure feeder and invertebrates and things like that. I don't think I've ever seen a good dry field gadwall feed in my life. I can think of, probably count on both hands the number of gadwalls I've ever shot over dry field spread.
Blaming corn for loss of gadwall is a, can't do that one. But I will, I will admit to is, I do believe that it's shifting west, and the more and more pressure as we apply it in Arkansas, Missouri, and the more and more you see of it in Oklahoma and Kansas, it's going on. You'll shift those suckers even further west. Man, they never used to. You telling me that they used to kill mallards by the like crazy in North Texas? Kind of like the land of time forgot there too. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, you know, and the other aspect that we miss him, and look, I want Duck South to grow and be coast to coast, but our core audience is Mississippi flyway hunters. We hunt the most pressured birds in North America. Just statistically, we have double the number of hunters here as in most every other flyway, at least double. The pressure, the difference in how a duck responds in the central flyway to how as to how they respond here is night and day. The average 12-year-old with a kazoo could call ducks in a lot of parts out there. It's just they don't have the pressure. They haven't learned time and time again that, hey, that sound and that look means bad things for ducks.
I agree.
So, you know, it does get disheartening when, you know, you want to take your kid back to the place where you killed ducks 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 10 years ago. And the ducks aren't coming there anymore. And you want to shake your tiny fist at anybody you can blame. But what we have to look at is what's happening in our immediate environment, for one. You know, maybe your duck hole doesn't look different, but what does the surrounding area look like? You know, if I had a cypress break in the Mississippi Delta that I'd killed ducks on forever and the ducks stopped coming to it, the first thing I'm going to look at is, has my habitat changed? Okay, if that's a no, then we're going to expand out a little bit. Has my immediate surrounding area changed? Okay, if that's a no, then you go out a little bit more. But I can't think of anywhere down here on the south end of the flyway where we can look at our duck hole that we've had since Pawpaw, you know, handed it down to us, where you couldn't go out 15 miles and see a dramatic change in the landscape. Be it the type of crop, how the land was leveled, you know, what our drainage is, what type of food is there. We are in a different world than we were even, like you said, 20 years ago.
And I think you brought up a great point, and I didn't dive off into it with you, was the entitlement that, and man, I'm gonna make a few people listen to this mad, but it almost goes back to the world we live in today politically. You know, you hand this out and give it out for free and you're living good, and then all of a sudden it's gone and you scream and yell and stomp your feet, and just the entitlement culture politically that we live in.
Well, and that's one of the things that always tickled me about this argument is we're hunters. We're some of the most conservative people on this planet. But then you have people complaining about this stuff in the same way we object to people asking for entitlements from our government. Like, you know, if buying my license, you know, just bought me 300 and whatever ducks it would be for six per day for 60 days, what would be the challenge in it? You know, I mean, I could spend a lot less and buy a whole lot more meat. I promise you that.
Oh, heck yeah.
You know, I get it to a certain extent. You know, I want my children to see what I've seen, but I have to accept that things change. Look, Rocky, in my lifetime, the place where I grew up hunting was mallards and pintails. Mallards and pintails. Wood ducks were there. We weren't allowed to shoot them. It just wasn't something we did. It was probably around 84, a switch flipped and a gadwall showed up. And I can look back at my dad's records before that, and you didn't see a gadwall in the back limit in the Mississippi Delta. They just weren't killed that often. And all of a sudden, they started coming here. Something changed, and they became a big part of our bag here. But that's a change in my lifetime in the type of birds and what I saw in some of the most pristine habitat that there is. Nature is a dynamic environment. It is not static. It changes and reacts to the stimulus just like anything else. And that stimulus could be the change of weather, the change of landscape, the change of human behavior and predator behavior. We are predators to ducks. If our behavior changes, be that pressure, be that access, they're going to respond. And we have to continue to evolve our hunting style the same way they continue to evolve their fight for survival. It's part of being a hunter.
We've looked at it from a micro standpoint. I want to say this as we wrap this up. The thing that you got to look at is the whole picture. People in the Mississippi Flyway are having a tough season. People in the Central Flyway are having a tougher season. And people in the Pacific Flyway, I got a text this morning, are having an unreal tough season. So,
yep.
Don't think it's just your part of the world. It's everywhere. And it just goes back to that text that I got from the guy in Alberta. This guy drives all across Alberta. Huge waterfowler. He says, there's tons of birds still there. So you can blame DU. You can blame Delta Waterfowl. You can blame a flooded cornfield sitting in Northwest Missouri. You can do whatever you want to. But at the end of the day, the fact is the ducks hadn't left from up north. There are small pushes, pockets of ducks and geese here and there, but not the main push. And if you don't have to leave, I will say this. Let me give you let's turn all of this around. Let's look at this from a positive spin. If it's the case throughout the rest of the season, it stays exactly the way it is, and our ducks are sitting in Canada. I'm going to tell you something. And it stays wet up there. We could have the biggest explosion of waterfowl ever because they didn't use all their body weight and kill themselves and stress getting down here and back up.
Yep. The only problem with that is that if it does happen, we got to hope that next year we get a good fronts and pushes to move them down here because there's young ducks that won't know how to get here.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm talking about, it being a dynamic system. It's not, it's not just, okay, duck wakes up, cracks the eggshell and comes out and says, oh, wow, well, it's some October, November, I need to be in Louisiana. They don't know. They don't know to be here. They've got to be shown to be here. And when there are people still killing ducks at the most farthest northern reach where the season is still open, it's just a tough year, man. Just suck it up, Buttercup. They're going to be bad ones.
Woo. Hey, I'll tell you this. You could be a snow goose hunter because they only had about a 10 or 20% hatch or survivability of the hatch. And man,
it's going to be all adult birds this year.
You know how tough it is killing an adult snow goose?
Oh, yeah. Well, Rocky, I'm going to go back and point out something else to you that we mentioned earlier, and I meant to get it in at the time, is you talk about the gadwall problem. We've seen a steady decline in gadwall numbers over the last couple of years. And when we see it on the numbers come out every year. It's like, oh, we're only down 7%, but we're still above long-term average. We're still another 9%, but we're still above long-term average. I think over the last three or four breeding seasons, the gadwall numbers have come down, and I think it's around 24%. I can see that in my own environments down here. We've lost gadwall numbers, and they're still a great number of gadwall. Absolutely. Most populations are still above long-term average, but if you take away 25% of what you had, that's a lot less. That's a lot less. So, I mean, people will say when they listen to this podcast, oh, well, they just want to say that, oh, well, duck hunting's always going to be good. It's just a bad year because they're trying to keep their business alive. We don't make a dollar off this. I don't make a penny off this. I'm just trying to be realistic to the young guys or the new hunters out there that are saying, well, maybe these FFL guys are onto something. It's the heated ponds and the flooded corn and this, that, and the other. I'm sorry. Out of 38 years of doing this and 30-something years of records before that I've got to look back on, bad years happen. Suck it up, Buttercup. If a bad year gets you out of duck hunting, maybe it's not your thing. I mean, really, you're going to have bad days. I want everybody to stay in it and love it and enjoy it. But if one bad year makes you want to scrap the entire North American waterfowl management plan, you're in the wrong sport.
Do you know how many 5 year and under people and that hadn't been in it long, that's had a couple of good seasons and this having a really bad one this year, are falling prey to things like FFL and believing all this crap?
That's why I came back in and started speaking up again, Rocky. I don't want to lose them. You know?
It's that they're just falling prey to it. My yeah. good buddy Dustin Villarillo, he joined right in with them. Not that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's really what brought me back was, you know, there's a lot of new guys that they want the easy button. They want to hit the easy button. And the easy button is blame someone else. Not do what's best for ducks. Suck it up.
You know what,
tough out a hard season.
You know what? You know what gets me is you see all these people go out west on these elk hunts, and you may kill an elk, what, one out of 5 years? Mule deer hunt,
right.
1 out of 5 years? And I'm going to get them next year. We heard them, and they were there, but which I guess I'll have to go back out there next year and get on them. You know, I think that if we looked at it, the main problem, and I'll end on this note, that we have with duck hunting, we look at it as a kill sport, not as hunting.
Yep.
And it goes back to what you said. We feel we're entitled.
I bought my license. Where are my ducks?
Well, great podcast to end on before the Christmas holidays. We'll be gone a few days next week. So, Bradley, we closed out a really good one to end it on before Christmas.
Well, I hope Santa Claus brings everybody lots of green or whatever kind of colored feathers you want.
I don't see anything possible that in the 10 or 15 day forecast that's going to fulfill that promise.
Hope springs eternal in the heart of the true waterfowler, Rocky. That's why we go every day.
All right, well, Bradley, Merry Christmas to you, and we will talk to you soon. Our buddy, hey, I will end on this note, Josh Webb, right, co-host here at the End of the Line podcast. Add an addition to the family today as we record this. He sent me a text right before we got started. Congratulations, Josh. Being new, well, you're not a new dad. You've already been a dad, but expanding the family. Josh is a good dad, man. He's a good guy.
Great. I'm happy for him. Can't wait to find out what we got to play with next. I don't know what's going on if it's boy or girl, so I'm waiting to hear the news.
All right, well, Bradley, have a great weekend. When are you headed back out?
December 26th, but I'm going back to Oklahoma for the next 20 days or so. So I left my hunting gear out there.
Okay. Well, be careful traveling out. Have a great holiday. I want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com. Merry Christmas to all you guys. Thank you for being faithful listeners to every one of these. Really appreciate it. Have a great holiday.